Reading this morning from Srimad Bhagavatam. Canto 1, Chapter 4, Texts 12 and 13, no, 11 and 12. Chapter 4 comes after chapters 1 through 3. Chapters 1 through 3 are a summary of the entire Srimad Bhagavatam in the form of questions and answers. As the whole Srimad Bhagavatam is, the format is questions and answers. I think the basic is Maharaj Parikshit speaking to Shukadeva Goswami. But in the first canto, Shukadeva Goswami hasn't appeared yet. So it's Sutta Goswami, who heard the conversation between the two, describing to the sages of Naimisharanya what he heard. So in chapter 4, Shonaka, Rishi, on behalf of the sages of Naimisharanya, they're speaking to Sutta saying, what happened? What was this discussion between Maharaj Parikshit and Shukadeva Goswami? He's drawing the subject matter in the form of questions. And some essence themes of this whole canto are embedded in the chapter. That is, what's the qualification of a sadhu? How do you recognize who a sadhu is? When then, what does a sadhu do? What's the behaviors of a sadhu? And then, the qualifications of one to receive the gift of the sadhu. And how do they qualify themselves to be the recipient of the gift that sadhus want to give? Because in spiritual exchanges, you have to have both. Qualified speaker, using Prabhupada's language, qualified speaker, qualified listener. Like he uses the example of for pregnancy, there has to be a potent husband or father and a receptive mother, and then there can be pregnancy. So to have the pregnant act of receiving transcendental knowledge, there has to be a qualified person. We need to know what's the qualifications. And absent those qualifications, what do you find? You find disqualifications. So it details them for our training and our edification. And we were hearing the immediate verses just before this. Qualifications. Prabhupada gives a really wonderful definition of realization. Like, Sutta says, your questions are wonderful, and I want to respond to them as I have heard it from Shukadeva Goswami, and have realized it, and will try to present it just as I received it and realized it. So, and Prabhupada explains what realization is. his language is very nice, but basically it's no editing allowed. You can't add or delete things, just present. But it's also according to the audience, without deleting essences, presenting essences according to time, place, circumstance, and audience. That, Prabhupada says, is realized. And Sutta has that qualification. So that's one of the qualifications of a sadhu. He speaks nothing but what he has heard. That's, let's say it the other way. He doesn't speak speculation. He speaks only what he has heard. But he speaks it in such a way that's appropriate for the audience. And essences are not deleted. So that's another point that Prabhupada makes, is that a sadhu is not one who panders to the interests of the audience. They're not flatterers or try to satisfy the whims of ordinary citizens. Their mission is to please the personality of Godhead, and they speak accordingly. They try to speak appropriate for the time, place, audience, but it's not pleasing the audience, it's pleasing the personality of Godhead. That's their consciousness, that's their delivery, and that's what a sadhu's qualification is. They're fixed in that conception. And the idea here is Shukadeva Goswami was such a speaker. Sutta, you heard him speak. Not only he spoke, but what he spoke was, in this section of verses, the incarnation of the Lord in literature. Literary incarnation in the form of Srimad Bhagavatam. That's what the Bhagavatam is described as within the Bhagavatam, but also in Padma Purana and other Sattvic Puranas. I'll say it again. The Srimad Bhagavatam is Krishna in literary form. That was presented at the end of the third chapter when Krishna disappeared at the end of Dwarapa Yuga, like the setting of the sun in the west. That marked the end of Dwarapa Yuga and the beginning of the night of Kali Yuga. So, as the sun sets in the west, sometimes the moon rises on the east. In this case, the moon was as brilliant as the sun, giving illumination in this dark age of Kali to all those who want it, and of course for those who don't want it, it means nothing. It remains darkness. But the illumination is accessible for those who want it. Krishna appeared in that way. Very nice imagery. The full moon rising on the eastern horizon, as brilliant as the sun, and Prabhupada explains, but not blazing like the sun, but soothing like the moon, but as brilliant as the sun. That's this Bhagavatam. And it's meant to give light to everyone, but some people have their eyes shut, and so they don't see the light, and they see darkness, in the darkness of the age of Kali all around. So Shukadeva Goswami spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam, having received it from Vyas, himself having realized it, and explained it in detail to Maharaj Parikshit. And then some words of glorifying Maharaj Parikshit. How qualified was Maharaj Parikshit as a listener, as a receiver of the message? So we're getting some understandings, some instructions about how to be good listeners, how to be good receivers of transcendental knowledge. Maharaj Parikshit is our role model. He's our exemplar. He's our acharya in hearing. So we study how the acharya achieve spiritual perfection, how we can go down that path ourselves. ended at State College yesterday morning with Maharaj Pariksit was a great emperor and possessed all the opulences of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. His grandfathers were the Pandavas, and he was such a great king, he was increasing the prestige of that dynasty. How great was Maharaj Pariksit? Why did he give up everything to sit down at the bank of the Ganges and fast until death? Why would he do that? He's got the world literally in the palm of his hand. Powerful. Everyone loved him. Everyone was obedient to him. No enemies. Great riches. The topmost position, that he just walked away from it. Sat down to fast till death. That opulence of detachment of a great soul was amazing. So Shaunaka wanted to hear. With great eagerness he wanted to hear. Now, that's all background to know. Text number 11. Shaunaka continues to ask Maharaj Pariksit was such a great emperor that all his enemies would come and bow down at his feet and surrender all their wealth for their own benefit. He was full of youth, strength, and possessed insuperable kingly opulences. Why did he want to give up everything, including his life? And then, text 12, those who are devoted to the cause of the Personality of Godhead live only for the welfare, development, and happiness of others. Of course, this is true of even a pious person. A pious person is dedicated to selfless acts. Their life, their wealth, their strength, their knowledge, their ability, whatever they have, is for serving others. Common understanding. Or to speak of a spotlessly pure devotee of the Lord. Everything for the Personality of Godhead, which means because he's the father of all beings, for the welfare of all beings. That's his dedication. They do not live for any selfish interest. So, even though Emperor Pariksit was free from all attachment to worldly possessions, how could he give up his mortal body, which was shelter for others? He was such an instrument for Krishna's service, to give protection to everyone. How could he give up that which was the protection for everyone? How to understand it? Even if he was detached, okay, he's detached. But not in the sense of attachment as like pride or enjoying sensual pleasures. Both gross and subtle selfish happiness was not known to him. Okay. Service to others is known to him. And that which is the means of service to others, he just gave it up. How could he do it? Why did he do it? That's their question. Nice question. Here's Prabhupada's purport. Pariksit Maharaj was an ideal king and householder because he was a devotee of the Personality of Godhead. And the emperor was a typical example of this. Personally, he had no attachment for all the worldly opulences in his possession. But since he was king for the all-around welfare of his citizens, he was always busy in the welfare work of the public, not only for this life, but also for the next. So the welfare was not just people could have opulent life in this life, but he was concerned about their destination after this life. How did the principles by which you live your life now determines your destination after this life? So he was concerned on that level also. He would not allow slaughterhouses or killing of cows. That's already been explained. When he saw the personality of Kali breaking the legs of the bull at once, he came to chastise him. Cut him down, literally. Cut him down. Stop it. Because he was a devotee of the Lord, he knew perfectly well how to conduct his administration for everyone's happiness. Men, animals, plants, and all living creatures. He was not selfishly interested. Then Prabhupada says, very short, powerful sentence, selfishness is either self-centered or self-extended. It's either I or mine. And mine can be my immediate family, or my extended family, or my group, or my nation, or mankind. Just keep concentric circles can expand. So that can be extended selfishness or narrow selfishness. But self-centered or self-extended, either case, it's selfishness. And Maharaj Pariksit didn't know that. He was neither. His interest was to please the Supreme Truth, the Personality of Godhead. The king is the representative of the Supreme Lord, and therefore the king's interest must be identical with that of the Supreme Lord. The Supreme Lord wants all living beings to be obedient to him and thereby become happy. The king's interest was to guide all subjects back to the kingdom of God. Hence, the activities of the citizens should be coordinated so they can, at the end, go back to Godhead, back to home. Under the administration of a representative king, the kingdom is full of opulence. At that time, human beings need not eat animals. Twice he's inserted that message in the purport. There are ample food, grains, milk, fruits, and vegetables, so that human beings as well as the animals can eat sumptuously to their heart's content. If all living beings are satisfied with food and shelter and obey the prescribed rules, there cannot be any disturbance between one living being and another. Emperor Pariksit was a worthy king, and therefore all were happy under his reign. Prabhupada's taking major portion of the purport to describe what are the qualities of a devotee, and specifically what's the qualities of a devotee king, and in contrast, what are the qualities of a selfish person who is not devoted to the personality of Godhead and the position of a extended selfish king. That's a misnomer, because a king should be the representative of the personality of Godhead and treated in that way and behave in that way, both. We get in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we get history, but at the same time we're getting very nice instruction about how to conduct our life and the principles, the guiding principles that we should live our life by, particularly in this age of darkness, is giving us that light. Mahabharata does similarly, and Ramayana does similarly, but the Bhagavatam is described as the monarch of such literature, because the focus specifically goes not just to morality, but the personality of Godhead, and pleasing the personality of Godhead. In every verse, in every page, in every chapter, in every canto, in the whole work, focus. It's described at the very beginning of the Bhagavatam. Dharma prodita kaitavotra paramo nirmatsaranam sitam. The paradharma is the message of Bhagavatam, and Prabhupada explains that in the next purport. There's distinction being made between the brahmanas, whose duty it is to be very expert in pronunciation of mantras, because the flawless pronunciation of mantras and the execution of karmakanda rituals is necessary to bring the benefits of rituals to the persons who participate in them. If there's even one syllable pronounced incorrectly, the whole thing is nullified. Or what to speak of mispronounced, you can get even just the opposite result. That's described in the sixth canto of the Bhagavatam, where Tvashta, who was the father of Vishvarup, became so angry at Indra because Indra had solicited the assistance of Vishvarup, Tvashta's son, to help the demigods from protection against the demons. There was a situation where the priest of the demigods had been insulted by Indra, and he left. Brihaspati left, just disgusted with the arrogance of Indra. So in the absence of Brihaspati, the demons understood now is our chance. They've lost the favor of Brihaspati. They have become weakened. Now is our chance. They came and took over the kingdom of the demigods. So Indra went to Lord Brahma. What to do? We lost our kingdom. Please help. And Brahma's reply was, Indra, when are you going to learn? You're always doing these things that are prideful and foolish. You're the king of heaven. Indra, get it together. Stop being like this. But I can give you some advice, and the advice is Tvashta has a very qualified son. He knows all kinds of wonderful mantras, and he's very liberal Brahman, and you approach him and likely he'll give you some help. So we went to Vishwarup, skipping some nice detail. Vishwarup provided Indra with Narayana Kavacha mantra, how he can be protected in battle, and he went to battle and the demigods were victorious. So Vishwarup was very good. He saved the demigods, regained their kingdom. So he's now occupying Brihaspati's position of the priest. But he specifically was that kind of priest who was performing the rituals, like what's the term? The priest that performs rituals. Forget the term. Indra understood. Vishwarup knows how to perform the ritual for producing soma rasa. So he engaged Vishwarup in producing soma rasa, and he produced soma rasa. But because Vishwarup's mother, that's Tvashta's wife, was from the Daitya dynasty, without letting Indra know, he offered oblations into the fire, including names of some of the members of his mother's family, so they would also have soma rasa. When Indra found out, wait, you're giving soma rasa to the Daityas, how dare you, and cut off his heads with his sword, like burst of anger. Then he realized, I've done it again. So he went to undergo austerities for a whole year. And then when he came back, he distributed some of the results of reactions of those austerities, or his sins, to others. So he's back in his kingdom. But Tvashta, the father of Vishvarup, was not forgiving. It's because it's such a heinous act. He killed the son who saved him. So he performed a yajna that would produce a demon that would kill Indra out of the sacrificial fire. And he, in the course of the pronunciation of the mantras, he pronounced one syllable wrong. It was Indra Chatraho instead of Indra Chatro. So he produced one who would become the enemy of Indra. But that's what he wanted. But instead he was the one who would become Indra's enemy. That means Indra would kill him instead of he would kill Indra. Just by one syllable. So he not only didn't get the full effect, he got the opposite. Supposing you have a brahmana, you go to the brahmana and say, can you perform a yajna so that I will have a successful business? And he pronounces one syllable wrong. Or, my daughter will have a nice husband. One syllable wrong. So that we have good health in our family, one syllable wrong. Either it's nothing, or possibly just the opposite. So Prabhupada explained, there are brahmanas who are expert in such, or he's supposed to be, and it has to be just so, absolutely 100% precise. And then, in the verse, the Bhagavatam is describing the position of Shukadeva Goswami. Shukadeva Goswami wasn't such a brahmana. He wasn't a ritualistic priest that knew the precise pronunciation of mantras. He never studied it. Rather, he heard the Srimad Bhagavatam and was expert in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So expert that when he spoke it, not only Maharaj Pariksit was hearing, but all the sages. And in the audience even was his father, Vyas, and his spiritual master, Narada. And Brighu, and Atri Muni, and Gotama, and so many rishis were in the audience hearing from 16-year-old boy Shukadeva Goswami. So how qualified was Shukadeva Goswami? So he's in this other category, not a ritualistic priest, but a Paribrajakacharya. Prabhupada is using that term. His interest is simply in the all-around welfare of the citizens, not just simply good wife, good wealth, good health, which are important, but ultimately the spiritual welfare. And such was the qualification of Shukadeva Goswami. And so this ends this little section where they say Shonaka is saying to Sutta, we know that you are expert in the meaning of all subjects except some portion of the Vedas. That some portion of the Vedas is the ritualistic yajna portion. Sutta Goswami was not expert in that. His father, Sutta Goswami's father, was Romaharshan Sutta. Romaharshan Sutta was a disciple of Vyas. And when Vyas divided the Vedas, he entrusted different portions of the Vedas. We're going to find that out later in this chapter 4. He entrusted portions of the Vedas to different disciples. And they took charge of the Rig Veda. They had their team. Their mission was to maintain it, preserve it, uphold it, chant it backwards, forwards, literally. Those who are very, very expert in the Rig Veda mantras, they can not only chant them, but they can chant them backwards as part of the necessity of committing it to memory. So that there's like, you know, you do the calculation this way, you do the calculation that way. You make sure you got the calculation right. Absolutely certain. So, Rig Sama Yajur in the Atharva Vedas, and Romaharshan Sutta was entrusted with the Puranic literature, and his son was Sutta. So Sutta was trained by his father. He was expert. He didn't know the details of all the Karmakanda rituals. Some portion of the Vedas was not expertly known by him, but the portion that deals with focusing upon the personality of Godhead, specifically the Srimad Bhagavatam, having heard the Srimad Bhagavatam from Shukadev, oh, Sutta, Sutta, Mahabhag, oh, the verses there. The sages are excited. Please describe that message that you heard from Shukadev Goswami, because the message is topmost message. And you're Sukadev is the topmost personality, and you're the right one to deliver it, because you've realized it in fullness. And all the questions that we put before you, you can answer so expertly. Please describe. So this is one of the qualifications of the audience to hear, is great eagerness. Just like early in the morning and you've left your homes to come and hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's a symptom of qualification to receive the message. It's not a mechanical thing. In other words, it's a matter of the heart. And when the heart is open, then the heart can receive. And one should also be discriminating who to hear from. And who to hear from is one who is repeating the message in disciplic succession. One who is not changing the message of disciplic succession. One who is personally living the message of disciplic succession. One who can present it, just repeating what was said earlier here. One who is repeating appropriate for the audience. Like, you know, children or educated persons or not educated persons. Like a nice example of this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I really like Bhaktivinoda Thakur. The range of Bhaktivinoda Thakur's expertise was the whole rainbow. He wrote books in Sanskrit, and he taught village people that couldn't read at all through medium of song. Then he wrote commentary in Sanskrit. He wrote commentary in Bengali. He wrote commentary in English. He wrote novels so that the essence of the scriptures could be presented in a very palatable form, because people like novels. But he presented, if you know the scriptures, like one book he wrote, Jiva Dharma. It's contemporary. It's some young men from Calcutta during the... It was fiction. But two fictitious college students during the time of Bhaktivinoda Thakur who were raised, they described, you know, the sensibilities and the value system and all the pressures that they were under according to, you know, a well-situated young Bengali educated family, aristocratic family. They somehow made a visit to hear the sadhus in Navadvipa. Mahabhagavatas. And then what they heard, chapter by chapter, is the entire Nectar of Devotion and Nectar of Instruction. Chapter by chapter. But then there's all this intrigue of what they started wondering, should we do this or should we get married? What about their parents and their parents' pressure? And they were thinking, oh my God, our sons are getting too involved in this. We have to hurry up and get them married. And all those dynamics were blended in. It was fiction. But he was presenting in a very readable fashion the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Brilliant. But his range was this, you know, all-inclusive range. Such a qualified personality. He would receive simple people in his home, and he would receive sadhus in his home. He would receive scholars in his home, and he would receive grihasthas in his home. Renunciates. And his range was everywhere. He was an all-encompassing personality. So, a very expert person. And in his case, he was a grihastha. But persons who were abjectly renounced, like Gorkhishore Das Babaji, would come to hear from him. He, Gorkhishore, was renunciation personified. But he went to hear from a householder who had 10 children, because his realization was so elevated. He sat at his feet and heard from him. So, in this case, Shukadeva Goswami is renounced, and that sense of detachment is essential, but that detachment need not be ashram-specific. Bhaktivinoda Thakur had wealth and intellect and family life, but he was completely attached to Krishna. That's the real symptom of detachment. And Sutta Goswami is appreciating that, and the sages are appreciating that. And Maharaj Pariksit, so back to this, why did Maharaj Pariksit, even he's detached, why did he give up his body, which was the shelter of so many people? So that I can give a short answer, but that question prompts a lot of discussion. What's the principles upon which an elevated personality will choose to act? And the act of hearing from Shukadeva Goswami the message of Srimad Bhagavatam was the glorious act. He's showing us by example how to properly hear and fix our consciousness upon the personality of Godhead. Now, he also had a son, and his son was as qualified as himself, so he turned the kingdom over to his son. He left the citizens unprotected. And he had trained his son as he had been trained by the Pandavas and the priest of the Pandavas and the whole royal family. So as Maharaj Pariksit had been given the association necessary to become so qualified, he had given his son this similar association and training. So the citizens would continue to be protected. But for himself, the curse was he was to die in 7 days. And so he didn't whine and complain and worry. He gave the kingdom to his son and sat ready to face death. But he wanted to fix his consciousness so he could face death properly. He's showing us by example. At some point in time, we're also going to get the notice. There's a knock on the door that says, "Who's there?" "Death. May I come in?" "No, you can't come in." "Well, you either let me in or I'm coming in." And what are we going to do? Panic? You know, run for under the table or something? How do we prepare ourselves? That's one of the questions that comes at the end of this canto when Maharaj Pariksit finally meets Shukadeva Goswami. He asks, how do you prepare yourself to meet death when that death notice comes? What do you do for people in general, and specifically those that have death notice? And we're not sure when it's going to come. We're not sure even there's going to be a notice. But we all know that people are dying. Just this, within the past 4 days in our ISKCON society, Bhakti Chu Maharaj was hospitalized with a heart problem. He's now been released, but they thought it was, they had to do an angioplasty and a whole deal, and he didn't have to have that, but, you know, the knock on the door was there. And Bhakti Purushottam Swami from Mayapur, ISKCON Mayapur, GBC. After Gaur Purnima festival, he was going to Calcutta to take a plane to go do some preaching tour, and he felt this pain, and he went to the hospital and was, you know, enlarged appendix, and they did some simple procedure, his condition got worse and got worse and got worse, and he was totally zoned out for about a week in the hospital. He's recovering now, but, you know, the knock on the door was there, and Krishnadas Swami, who lives in the UK, he's in Vrindavan right now, and the message is, I don't know what the problem is. This is from Bibi Madhava Maharaj, one of our sannyasi god brothers, said he'd met with him, and his condition is so severe he doesn't know if he'll live another day. So the, you know, they're getting their notice, but that's also notice to us. You know, the thoughtful person will understand, you know, it's just a question of time. The knock on the door is going to come. And it's not age specific. It could happen at any age. And what's the plan? What are we doing to prepare for that? We spend so much of our life preparing in education to when we grow up and we're mature adults and we're married and we have to perform some occupation. So we're preparing. How many hours of preparation goes into the livelihood position of life? And that's not a certainty. We don't know if we're going to live that long. But one thing we know is also a certainty is, and it's not morbid, it's just thoughtful persons consider, what am I doing now to prepare for that? And the Bhagavatam explicitly addresses the question. And the question is answered by hearing Krishna Katha, because by hearing Krishna Katha, it's meant to give us that focus and awaken the dormant spiritual consciousness of the soul so that when that moment comes, the thought of Krishna is there. And by the thinking of Krishna, yam yam vapi smaran bhavam cha jatante kalevaram, your destination is known. And if that's not there, your destination is according to the modes of nature and whatever attachments one has. It's unknown. So, while we have some vitality, the hearing of the proper hearing from the proper source, the message of Krishna Katha, is our teaching. And while we're doing, like Maharaj Prakshit, we're doing our duties, so they should be done very expertly, as Maharaj Prakshit was very, very expert, but at the same time with a degree of detachment. That is, when the notice comes, we're ready to let go. And we should make arrangements now so that things can carry on. We're training others so they can carry on this, the work of responsible life behind us. But we're ready to, when Krishna gives the notice, we're ready to go to Krishna. Or whatever the situation is that he wishes for us. And there's a way to qualify ourselves to accomplish that. Bhagavatam is indicating. So, any discussion or questions you'd like to bring up?
Can I ask one question?
Sure.
Anisha, Karan,
yeah.
Is it located in Navadvipa?
No.
Okay.
There's a Naimisharanya in Uttar Pradesh, in UP. It's north of Delhi. It's a pilgrimage place that's known. There's a railway stop, Naimisharanya. And in Navadvip is, according to Bhaktivinoda Thakur, it's the sum total of all sacred places, just like Krishna Loka is the sum total of all sacred places. So Navadvip is similarly. So there's a place in Navadvip where there is a Naimisharanya. But it's like that Naimisharanya in Navadvip is like the India Embassy in New York. There's India, and there's the Indian Embassy. And the Indian embassy is India. The laws of India apply. The police, you know, it's not New York, it's India. That little piece of land. Legally. So, spiritually speaking, Naimisharanya in Navadvipa is like an embassy. It's not different than Naimisharanya in UP. And it's a sacred place because the pastimes of the Lord take place. Naimisharanya specifically is described within the Vedic literature as the axis of the universe passes through there. Not just the axis of the planet, but the axis of the universe passes through Naimisharanya. So it's understood that when yajñas are performed at Naimisharanya, whatever benefit is to be derived is distributed throughout the universe. And so the sages chose Naimisharanya as the place where they wanted to do. They wanted, their plan was Kali Yuga's beginning, let's perform a yajña so that benefit will go. 10,000 year yajña was their plan, so the benefit will be expanded throughout the whole of the universe, because Kali Yuga doesn't just affect, you know, this planet. It affects the universe. It's an age. It affects the whole universe. So that was their plan. That's why they chose Naimisharanya.
The place where Sundaya
Goswami
appeared,
stagnant, yeah.
But is it, as it is, still there,
the location? Yes, it's in, well, you know, there are different, it's because the kingdom was in Hastinapur, which is Delhi. The place that he went to sit by the side of is the Ganges. So, as far as I understand, there are different authorities that say it's here, some say it's there. But it's an actual physical place where Shukadeva Goswami and Maharaj Pariksit had their discussion. Near Delhi, on the bank of the Ganges. That's right, you have to go further north. Anyone else? Yes.
You explained about the Ganges last time.
Yeah.
The diagram of one sutra is the last. Yeah. You explained about the Ganges.
Yeah, the chanting of Hare Krishna is different because it's not a karmakanda ritualistic type of mantra. And therefore, even if the syllables are not precisely pronounced, one still receives benefit. It's not, it's called abhas, if there's mispronunciation. So, what Srimad Bhagavatam and Padma Puran have to say about this is, great spiritual benefit comes even if it's not shuddhanam, if it's not perfectly pronounced and perfectly executed chanting. Basically, the idea is twofold. Krishna knows when you're calling him what you mean, and he accepts that devotion. And the other is that the name is absolute. So when the as in Vedic mantras, precise pronunciation and meter and so forth is required. Not so with the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra. It's in a different category. It has a different purpose. It's considered by the Vedas differently. Still, there's offenses that are to be avoided. They're described in Padma Purana. And they're related to having proper regard for the transcendental position of the holy name, or the transcendental position of the devotees of the Lord, the transcendental position of the scriptures, or the transcendental position of the spiritual master. The offenses to be avoided are relating to having a proper spiritual conception of the process of chanting, the process of devotional life. But it's not tied to technical procedures. Want to hear more, I could describe what those 10 offenses are, but the essence of them is having a proper spiritual conception. Just like to consider the glories of the chanting of the holy name to be imagination, or to consider the chanting of the holy name to be like a karmakanda ritual meant for bringing auspiciousness into one's life and counteracting inauspiciousness in one's life. That's not the purpose of the chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the names of God. To make offenses to the devotees who are dedicating their lives to chanting the holy names of the Lord, to neglect the instructions of the spiritual master, thinking him an ordinary person. These kinds of things are offenses. To blaspheme the Vedic literature is an offense to the chanting of the holy name. So seeing with a mundane conception that which is not mundane is the essence of those offenses. To be inattentive while chanting the holy name is another offense. So the antidote for that is attentiveness. So it's not a mechanical process, it's a devotional process. Well, chanting is the essence. It's the means for this age for achieving spiritual perfection. The chanting of God's holy name, according to the scriptures. In each of the ages of mankind, there's a specific, most effective means for deliverance, for achieving spiritual perfection. In Satya Yuga, it's meditation. Treta Yuga, it's performance of Vedic sacrifice. Dwarapa Yuga, it's deity worship. In this age, the chanting of the holy name. So that's the centerpiece, and everything else revolves around it or flows from it. So the most important thing in our day and in our whole life is how we chant the holy name, the chant, and how we, the qualitative way that we approach our chanting. And from that flows services of different descriptions. One of those primary services is the hearing of the scriptures. We've been talking about hearing of the scripture, now we're over to chanting of the holy name. But the two go together. Here's a very nice example that Prabhupada gave. That is, a train proceeds on two tracks. Now they have monorails, but the train proceeds on two tracks. And if one of the two tracks is missing, the train won't proceed. It'll capsize. So all of you may be used to this sound, but I'm not. I'm well suited for being a sannyasi. It just takes my attention. So, Prabhupada has explained, in order to proceed towards the spiritual goal, we need these two things. We need something that's going to cleanse the heart and something that's going to guide our activity. and you have one without the other is insufficient. So that which is to cleanse the heart is the chanting of the holy name. And the scripture is to guide our activity, to teach us how to lead our lives, particularly in this age of Kali. The principles by which we should lead our lives to guide us in proper conduct, and focusing that proper conduct upon the goal, the personality of Godhead, and combine the purified heart. So Prabhupada has described, if there's some purification of heart without proper guidance, it can very easily be mere sentiment, and mere sentiment can turn into fanaticism, and that's dangerous, we've seen. Then the other side is proper understanding of how to behave. But if we have proper understanding of how to behave without a pure heart, we won't be able to behave in that proper way, because there's dirty things in the heart that are taking us away from that good conduct. So both are needed. And then that, back to the metaphor, it's then both tracks are in place, we can proceed to the goal. So chanting, the acharya for chanting of the holy name is Haridas Thakur, Lord Chaitanya's Leela, and Haridas Thakur taught, in order to achieve the full benefit of chanting the holy name, there must be proper sambandha gyan. Sambandha gyan means knowledge of the relationship of all things with the Supreme. Sambandha means relationship. So this house, it has its relationship. The source of emanation is the Supreme. Somebody came along and put some money down with a bank and bought the house, and so they think, you know, one may think it's mine. But the source of emanation is the Supreme. And so one should lead one's life with the understanding that everything belongs to the Supreme. It has its relationship with the Supreme, and I'm passing through some period of time as an occupant of this body, an occupant of this house, and with certain family members, and so on and so on. But my real identity is I'm part of the Supreme, and all these other things, they're also part of the Supreme. And one should treat them accordingly. So, chanting of the holy name is at the heart of our life, at the means of deliverance in this age of Kali, and it's to be followed. The life of chanting of the holy name is to be followed in accordance with the teachings of the scripture, how to lead our lives to reach the goal, reach Krishna in pure devotion. So the most sacred part of your day, our day, is that time that we're spending chanting the holy name. It should be done with maximum attention, and all other things should just be wait till later. The tendency is, just because of our very deep involvement in material affairs, we're multiprocessing our material affairs while chanting, and that's an offense against the holy name. Those things should wait, and we focus our attention on chanting when we're chanting. And by focusing our attention on chanting while chanting, then we'll have Krishna thought, Krishna attachment, while we're then taking care of the affairs of the day. Krishna will empower us to do properly, in a Krishna conscious manner, our duties of life. That's how we should conduct our affairs. It's not a secular message. It's not that we separate our worldly affairs and our devotional activity. Our devotional activity is the centerpiece, and that gives spiritual strength to our duties of life. Chanting is that primary activity to spiritualize all of what we do. Yeah. Yes.
Why didn't he learn all the new rule that
I said it very succinctly. Janamejaya was his son. So Janamejaya was of age, sufficient age to become the king. So he turned the kingdom over to Janamejaya, who was qualified like his father. So he wasn't abandoning the protection of his citizens. He took care of the protection of the citizens through his son. And he accepted, this is a plan of the Lord to make an arrangement for me to fix my mind upon him. And so he did. That was his detachment. So there's discussion about Janamejaya's qualification in the Maharishi Pariksit passing on the kingdom to him. That, you know, the Sanskrit in the 19th chapter of this canto. He wasn't thinking, let's turn it the other way around, he wasn't thinking, only I can do it. If I'm not around, everything's going to fall apart. He wasn't thinking like that. If the Lord is doing, he's using me as an instrument, but he can use my son as an instrument. He's trained, he's qualified. The Lord is calling me for another service. What's that other service? Hearing Srimad Bhagavatam. The prompt for hearing Srimad Bhagavatam was Maharishi Pariksit is leaving his body. Shukadeva Goswami came, sent by the Lord of the heart. And he came, and Srimad Bhagavatam was spoken. So not only for his benefit, but for our benefit. He who sacrifices his life for others was sacrificing his life for us. Now, you know, we should be very careful about doing something like that whimsically on our part. Oh, Krishna wants me to give up my life for some higher cause. That's not too likely of a problem because most people are very attached to their body. They don't want to do that. But somebody may be foolish and think foolish thought. But because he was on the platform that he was, Maharishi Pariksit's all activities were directed by the personality of Godhead. That's our understanding. Including when he acted in a very uncharacteristic manner. When he came into the sage Shambhakrishi's home, he was in meditation, in trance. He was expecting to be received by the emperor of the kingdom. So you're a brahmana, you know culture. I'm thirsty. Speaking nothing? This is insulting. I curse you. He took the snake, put a snake over his neck. This give you a nice garland. So that's not Maharishi Pariksit. Anger, overwhelmed by thirst. Here he is, 7 days and nights. No thirst, no water, no drink, no sleep. That's Maharishi Pariksit. Overwhelmed by thirst. Overwhelmed by anger. That's not Maharishi Pariksit. He was induced like that by the personality of Godhead so that the Srimad Bhagavatam could be narrated for our benefit. So he was just fulfilling that purpose. And not abandoning the citizens that needed his protection. There's a higher purpose in his action. We need to be guided by higher purpose, higher purposes in general. Anything else? What about the rest of us? What about the rest of us?
Generally, we hear that whenever Krishna is there, there is no necessity.
Yes.
Yes. But we see sometimes, not sometimes, most of the time,
we're not on the platform of Maharishi Pariksit. We need guidance. So we seek confirmation from qualified souls.
My question is, even though Paramatma is supported in the world,
yes.
Why
Because the Lord sent their desire comes from misuse of free will. Krishna is saying yes and we're saying no. We have free will. Krishna says surrender unto me and we say no. Because we have free will. And we can use it properly and say yes. Or we can use it improperly and say no. And then there's varieties of no. According to the modes of nature, there's varieties of no. And therefore we have all varieties of life. People saying no in different ways. And there's varieties of yes. For one person, he becomes a king. For another person, he becomes a mendicant. Shukadeva Goswami, Maharaj Pariksit. Both are on the same platform. For one is a renunciate, and another is a householder. Different set of duties, but they're both saying yes. There's variety and there's variety. In the spiritual world, there's variety. In the material world, there's varieties of no. The prompt is free will. It's a choice that we make that even Krishna, Super Soul, doesn't interfere with. He's guiding us. And we're saying no. He's guiding us outside, he's guiding us inside, and we're saying no. Or in some cases, it's maybe. Or it's sometimes. It's mixed. Yes to the things I like, and no to the things I don't like. And we're trying to get, you know, more on the yes side and less on the no side. That's our position, the practitioners of sadhana bhakti. So we need that purification to make it yes. And then Super Soul's prompt becomes yes. Not no or maybe, or sometimes. It's an issue of free will that Krishna doesn't interfere with. It's just like the end of Bhagavad Gita. Krishna speaks Bhagavad Gita, and at the end he says, now Arjun, I've spoken, you deliberate, do as you feel you must do, yes or no, it's your choice. And Arjun gives a resounding yes. Krishe vachanam tava, whatever you have said, I'm ready. But it's a free will choice. We also. It's the answer. I'll give a short answer, and but then also direct you to Canto 2, chapters 1 through 3. The short answer is Shrotavya Kirtitavya Shadyaya Pujascha Nityadanta. One should hear Krishna Katha. That notice comes, stop everything, and invite sound vibration of Krishna Katha only. Surround yourself. Don't allow others to speak other things, just Krishna Katha, so that your consciousness is absorbed in Krishna. And then direct your attention. That's the receiving, and then the giving, the where your chaita, your consciousness goes, go to thought of Krishna and how to serve him. We can practice that now. This is like the warm-up session, you know, preparing for the Olympics. And then there's the trial run, and then there's the actual event, leaving this body. Ante Narayana Smriti. The fruit is ante at the end. Narayana Smriti. remembering the personality of Godhead. So that's our objective. What's that? Right now. We're in training. And then you could say the trial run, like, you know, say the Olympics, they have competition who's going to actually enter the Olympics. So that's like what just happened with Bhakti Chirumaraj and Krishna Das, you know, that's the trial run. Are you ready? And I read what Bhakti Chirumaraj wrote. He was ready. His prayer was, Krishna, take me. I'm ready. I just want my thought to be absorbed in you. And Krishna didn't take him. He said he was feeling very grateful that his training that Prabhupada had given, he wasn't fearful. He wasn't like, oh, I want to go to the spiritual world. It's Krishna, engage me how you, that's where his thought went. Just please keep me always in your service. That was where his thought went. That's the trial run. And then there's the actual event. That's okay. I just received a letter from a devotee, initiated devotee, who, for whatever the reason, they signed up for the military, and they're undergoing training so that they'll be sent, when they're sent off to Iraq in September, they're ready. So they were having a drill. And the drill was, they're in the medic squad. A medic squad, when there's a battle, they bring the helicopters and they parachute the medics, and the medics are to try to save the lives of people and put them in the helicopter and take them to the hospital if they're salvageable. And to, you know, be able to evaluate, this person's not salvageable, move right on to the next person, just walk away from the dying soldier and to one that they can save. Like, very intense. So, just this 3-4 days ago, they had this drill where 5 people went into a house to see, you know, medics, to see who they could save. And the drill was, they didn't know it, but someone threw a grenade into the house. It wasn't a live grenade, but, you know, their training was, what are you going to do when that grenade goes into the house? Because you're the medic squad. So what this devotee did was they threw their body on top of the grenade. They didn't think about it, said it wasn't time to think about it. It wasn't a live grenade, but had it been a live grenade, their body would have been smithereened, like, you know, powdered, splattered all over the place. They chanted Krishna's name really loud and fell on the grenade. Then they asked, is that right? Was my reflex response the right thing? Because I would have lost my life, but I would have saved the lives of the other 4 people. You know, it's like suicide to protect the life of 4 other people, giving up your own life. But that was a tough question to answer, but the answer that I gave was that because I know what their capacity is, they're making many, 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 many other people Krishna conscious, because when they're facing death, people turn to God. And this devotee has this unique ability to turn people to Krishna. But not just by distributing books and giving them deeds, but, you know, pouring out their heart about devotion to Krishna. And it's helping people become Krishna conscious. So I said, that body of that you're inside of is an instrument for Krishna's service. So you may be detached from the body, that's a nice quality, but it should be used carefully in Krishna's service. So consider not just abandoning the body because you're detached from it, but how to best use it in Krishna's service, which was the same thing that Bhakti Chirumaraj came to the conclusion of. While we have this body, we should not only just keep it fit so it'll live for a long time, but we should be using it, at keeping it fit, a sharp rather than a blunt instrument, but you should be very conscious to use it every moment, exclusively in Krishna's service. So that's like the trial run. No, I lost track of where that. Does that address the question? You okay with? You want to hear something more on the question? We're okay. Okay. So these, in one sense, the message of the Bhagavatam is, it's nice, but it might be seen abstract, like it really doesn't have anything to do with life, but it actually has everything to do with life. Because we're all in the process of living and dying, and in between doing other things. How are we preparing our lives now to be instruments of Krishna? Like, as Prabhupada is describing here, not just Maharaj Parikshit, excuse me, Shukadeva Goswami, because he was a sannyasi mendicant, but a devotee who's a devotee grahastha, who's attached to Krishna. How are we using this body and using our life breath and our energy and ability to manifest the message of Krishna? Manifest Krishna Katha, a devotional way of life, by example and by our words, by our achar and by our prachar in this world. As much as we think like that, we're a good instrument of Krishna. And our destination is certain. So it may not be a soldier jumping on a hand grenade, calling out to the top of their lungs, Krishna, and landing on the hand grenade. You know, the form of it may be quite different. But the preparedness, the consciousness that we carry is very, very important. How are we giving and receiving? Receiving Krishna's message and giving Krishna's message by our words, by our actions in everyday life. How are we instruments of Krishna in our everyday life? When it's an instrument of Krishna like that, their destination is certain. And that's the message of the Bhagavatam. That's what Prabhupada is writing in the purport about Shukadeva Goswami, is his business is to take people to the spiritual realm. And one who hears that message will be taken properly, will be taken to the spiritual realm. That's what happened to Maharaj Parikshit. And that's what will happen to us if we hear in the proper way and apply those things that we hear in the proper way. It's very nice. Okay. Time for breakfast. Grantharaj, Srimad Bhagavatam, Ki Jai.
Thank you very much.
Hare Krishna. Did you get through? Huh? Okay, and did you try it? You don't? Okay. Go upstairs for 2 minutes and see if I can solve a problem.